This is Pavlina Demchuk-Macquarie, producer and host of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Welcome, Vitayu. I hope you'll enjoy this next podcast of a feature interview recently broadcast on the show. Links to all Nash Holos podcasts and the live broadcasts, as well as program details at www.nashholos.com. We have reached Volodya on the phone. Volodya Volkov is with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. Welcome, Vitayu, Volodya.
Oh, hi, Paulette. It's a pleasure to be on air with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. And now you're in Lviv, which is a little ways away from Ukraine, from Kiev, the center of the protest, but you're still very much affected from what you've been telling me, what Renata has been telling me.
Sure. Everyone is very emotional here in Lviv, and I'm sure everyone is being very sensitive to what's happening in Kiev, all over Ukraine, even in the east, even in Crimea. The protest movement has really, you know, galvanized in the last week, and we have been hearing reports on more or less independent media about gatherings and little protests happening in Sevastopol, in Simferopol, Luhansk. Those are, you know, the Crimean cities and the far east parts of Ukraine. Here in Lviv, in the west, people are taking this issue very, very close and personal. And it's like, you know, when we were watching the events, the violence unfolding the other night, we all had tears rolling up our eyes. It was very difficult to just stay, not to care about it and stay indifferent. So everybody's very much involved.
Do you have any, do you know people personally who are on Maidan, who have been involved in the violence?
Yes, I do. I have some colleagues, friends of mine and my wife's, and they are very popular singers, and they're traveling all over, you know, France and Europe every year.
Who are they? Who are they? What group is it?
They're called Orfei. Orfei. A very popular. It's an eight member band. They sing a cappella, and they sing traditional and religious songs. And they always travel all over Europe, but they're very, you know, they're very expensive, but they decided to cancel lots of their invitations, and they decided to spend their time on Maidan. And a few of them have been there for about 2 weeks now in a row, and I know that those are my close friends that are there day in and out.
And so far, have any of them been affected by the violence? Have they managed to keep out of harm's way and escape the violence?
Yes, thankfully. Yes, they have been able to stay out of harm's way, but five people have been shot dead by now. Most of the international media have reported the earliest figure of two people being dead.
Yes.
The number has escalated to five people, and so everybody is really sad and also angered.
Of course. Volodya, we just aired the Ukrainian Jewish Heritage piece that you narrated about the accusations of anti-Semitism in Ukraine. And this is an old song. This has been going on for a long time. Accusations of Ukrainians are genetically anti-Semitic, and that this has been a chronic problem. But, of course, you know, we're working together to deliver a different message, a message of truth, which is that, you know, given left to themselves, Ukrainians and Jews can get along just fine, thank you very much. But when you've got outsiders who are trying to cause trouble between the two, and that's when the problem starts. There have been reports in various publications of escalating attacks against Jews in Ukraine. Do you think, is this, are these, for one thing, for one, are they actually true reports? And do you, if they are, do you think that there it has anything to do with Euromaidan?
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of them?
Well, I definitely agree with what you said, that this is an outside influence, also an influence that tries to divide, you know, and conquer, tries to set Ukrainians against the Jewish people, and it is definitely a stereotype that someone is trying to perpetuate by equating nationalism with anti-Semitism.
Right.
Definitely this is not true. It is far away, far from truth. In fact, and I have been to Maidan myself for 2 days, between December 21st and December 22nd. I have not seen any anti-Semitic rhetoric. I have not heard or seen anything anti-Semitic. You know, I've been there for almost 2 full days. I did not hear any single word, you know, that would be offensive to the Jewish community in Ukraine or anywhere else. So definitely everybody is really united there. There are no distinctions based on, you know, race, religion, ethnicity, or anything else, sexual orientation. This is completely untrue. And this is really affecting our work because at the, you know, at the Jewish Museum in Lviv, at the Feina Petrikova Center, we are really trying to, you know, promote reconciliation. We're trying with the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Canada. We are really trying to bring about peace, you know, and understanding between the Ukrainian and Jewish peoples. And so whenever somebody's trying to exploit, you know, a very charged, very sensitive political situation in our country, it's making our efforts, you know, very much more harder, and it's kind of setting us back somewhat. But we also understand that nowadays it's much harder to influence the public opinion and manipulate it, because people have alternative access to independent sources of information.
Mm-hmm.
So people are much more critical about it, and they have, you know, they have their own opinion about such articles or you know, public statements.
They are thinking for themselves, definitely, and using the tools available out there. We were talking about this last summer when you and I met at the museum, and you were saying that there has been, in the post-Soviet world, there still was a lot of fear of people expressing their own opinions, doing an original analysis. They would just compile a series of publications out there already, just put it together in a nice package, but they wouldn't offer anything personal. But even in the just what year and a half since we spoke, things have changed so much, as we're seeing.
Well, definitely the old school, Soviet school of, you know, of learning, of thinking, is that you have to listen, not to think. You have to be kind of, it trained your ability to memorize and regurgitate information, but not to analyze it critically. But, students have been at the forefront of this pro-European movement and protesting in Ukraine. And students of the younger generation, they are much more open, much more critical. They have exposure to other cultures, to other countries. And that's why it is so important for us, for Ukraine, to continue moving towards Europe, you know, towards a democratic model of governance, because that will bring more international connections, more international exposure. We will be moving into a more, into a realm of a more critically oriented sort of independent culture of thinking. You know, rather than moving into the, the post-Soviet orbit, where the same old school of just listening and not analyzing information dominates. And so that's why it's so important. It's one of the those elements in the in the pro-European political orientation of the country. It's one of those major benefits that Ukraine would get if it were to integrate into the sign the association agreement with the European Union, because it would bring that more a kind of opportunity to think for yourself, more connections, more people, more students would go to study abroad, exchange programs, or just regular meetings, just going for a trip, a family trip, let's say, to one of the European countries.
Just having a normal life, having a normal life like anybody else, yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that the, for example, the Russian government is afraid of. Russia and Belarus are very closed societies, and their elites, the ruling elites, they want to keep those societies closed for as long as possible, because even any little crack in the system, in the mentality and the thinking of people, it's going to have a a snowball reaction. It's going to plant those seeds of independence and thinking for yourself kind of attitude. That's why that Russia, if Ukraine becomes democratic, if a democratization starts to happen, it is definitely going to spill over to Russia and Belarus, and that's going to destabilize. You're just going to shake up the entire managed democracy model that is now. It's not even a democracy anymore. It's just a managed dictatorship in Russia, and so that's why they take it very, threatening, the events that are happening in Ukraine, because it is going to be an example of a thinking and a democratic culture, and they don't want that to, they don't want that to start happening in Russia or Belarus as well.
Well, because then their power base obviously will be very much threatened.
Yes, because then they cannot, when you listen to media reports in Russia, it's incredible how ridiculous the accusations are, and then and you would think it's just a joke, but then you understand people are buying into it. Not everyone, of course. There is the IT professionals. Mm-hmm. There are some really modern thinking people who, mm-hmm. but they don't have. They're not. There is no critical mass yet in Russia. But you're really surprised at how these reports are. Taking for as a real thing, so because people are used to believing what they see on a TV, on a state TV.
Sure.
In Russia, they even call them zombie bugs.
Oh, really?
And for example, I was watching one of the interviews with the political opposition. One of the members of political opposition in Russia, and he said that when Kursk, the atomic submarine, when it kind of became, when it basically drowned in Russia, in the northern sea, there were lots of grieving mothers, that were just shocked by the fact that their sons, their husbands died on that submarine. It's a very, it's a strategic submarine. It's supposed to be very safe. They were shocked, and And the media controlled, state controlled media reported that those mothers are not, in fact, grieving mothers, but they were those were just regular women who were paid to show their emotions. You know?
Yeah. That is.
That's how much propaganda you have there.
That's reprehensible. Volodya, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your viewpoints and your analysis. I really appreciate that. I'm sorry that I have to cut you off. We are late with some messages.
No problem.
We are late with some messages. So thank you very much and bless you and keep well.
Bless you. Thank you very much.
Okay, and
thank you for your attention to this issue.
And our best to Renata as well.
I hope you enjoyed this feature interview from Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In addition to interviews such as the one you just heard, Nash Holos is host to many other outstanding features produced by people who love to share their love of Ukrainian culture with non-Ukrainian speakers. From Ukrainian recipes and cooking tips to reviews of English language books on Ukrainian themes, views on Ukrainian politics and current affairs, culture, folklore, and of course great Ukrainian music, traditional and contemporary, by artists from Ukraine, Canada, and around the world. So join me, Pavlina, and my fascinating guests on the weekly radio broadcasts in Vancouver and Nanaimo. You can listen to the live broadcast on air or online, or download the podcast and listen later in your own good time. You'll find program information, broadcast details, and podcast links at www.nashholos.com. So until next time, dopa bachinya.